This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Computer technology seems to be changing everything, from the way we communicate with each other to how we work, entertain ourselves, shop, bank. Advertisers are busy figuring out how to reach us in cyberspace. In fact, everyone seems to be frantically trying to figure out how to make a buck there. High Stakes in Cyberspace is the name of a new documentary for the PBS Frontline series that will be broadcast next Tuesday. My guest is correspondent Robert Krulwich. He's also a reporter with ABC TV and is NPR's former economics reporter. His Frontline documentary looks at how advertisers are encroaching on the internet and computerized systems like video on demand. Krulwich asks, what are we gaining with these new technologies and what are we giving up? Lots of businesses are setting up on the internet, hoping to eventually make a lot of money. I ask Krulwich if anyone is making money there yet.
What I noticed was the people who are making money are the people who understand that all this is so far is a gathering place of some people who are very willing to tell about themselves. So for direct marketers, for advertisers, for businessmen whose job it is to collect data on customers, the first business of cyberspace turns out to be data collection.
Well, how do advertisers get to watch their potential consumers on the internet? How do they collect data about their potential consumers?
Well, the company that signs me up and allows me to wander around has the ability to see where I go. So if I turn on my computer and make my telephone call and I get online and then I decide, since I'm interested in Buicks anyway, I decide to go look at the Buick page and check out a particular Buick model, the server, that's the company that lets me on, can see me going to the Buick page, can see how long I stare at the Buick page, can see whether I click anything on the Buick page, and can tell Buick all the things I've just done. Now, that means that Buick knows that Robert Krulwich, of such and such an address and such a say, at such and such an age, is very interested in Buicks, and maybe I'll get mail. But the neat part of it is that I'm calling on my own dime, and then I'm going to the Buick page, and I'm being studied, and then somewhere in the Buick page they may say, hey, Robert Krulwich, if you're so interested in Buicks, why don't we offer you a special T-shirt or a discount or a prize or something if you'll tell us a little bit about your reaction to the new Buick blah, blah, blah. So I start happily answering questions. Now suddenly, again, I'm paying for the telephone call. Buick is turning me into a focus group, helping discover what makes their ads work or not work, their car work or not work. And all this information is being gathered. And who's paying? I am.
And what's the incentive to you to answer their questions?
I love the T-shirt.
They're giving you a little prize.
Yeah. Now, you think, well, you're on NPR, so you're like me. I was very surprised. Let me just give you a situation. The Pepsi-Cola company wanted to find out who drinks Diet Coke. So they sent out a million cases of their product, Pepsi, to the Diet Coke drinkers. I guess it was a Diet Pepsi. And on the six-pack that arrived at all these homes was a little notice that said, would you like to call Ray Charles? Ray Charles would like to speak to you. Please dial 1-800 blah, 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 blah. Of a million people who were invited to call Ray Charles on the telephone, I would have guessed maybe 8 or 9% might have made what would have been a dingbat telephone call to a pre-recorded Ray Charles. However, half of the people, 500,000 people, called Ray Charles. Ray Charles and the girls answer your questions and ask you questions. Like they say, what's your name? What are your enthusiasms? When do you drink beverages? And so forth. And it goes on for 4 minutes. Of the 500,000 people who called, how many do you suppose, or what proportion do you suppose, stayed on for the whole 4 minutes?
How many?
I think 89 or 90-something percent.
What was the incentive?
They wanted to talk to Ray and hear the And when at last they're asked whether they say, now you're probably wondering whether you won the prize. And you say, yeah, have I won the prize? And the girls all, I think you, all the time, so maybe one person, because we're told, So everybody hangs up the phone. Now, what's just happened there is all America has been, they're making the call. They've all spent their own time telling a marketer about themselves and helping the marketer gather information about the consumer. And this is fabulously valuable. Now, this is done on a telephone, on a fancy telephone exchange. Sometimes it's done on a computer. Sometimes it's done in some other newfangled machines. But basically, the marketers are discovering that in this environment, people are very, very happy to trade private information for some opportunities. And when you get to the Bell Telephone Company's program, the Bell Atlantic program, then you get into what I think is the by far the most subtle and interesting version so far.
How so?
Well, Bell Atlantic and a couple of other telephone companies have created something called Stargazer. It's already up in Virginia, and it's a box that goes on your TV set. And according to a truly fabulous fellow, I think, named Ray Smith, who is the president of the telephone company and is big, a wonderful a salesman and an enthusiast for this kind of thing, as you'll find anywhere, and who loves the idea of this, he starts imagining things that his system is about to be able to do. Of course, you can order a movie when you want, and you can order some TV shows when you want. But he says, now the ads, you see. He says, we're going to have ads. I said, well, why would I want an ad if I have to pay, you know, a few $100s to get on this system? I don't want an ad. He said, yes, you will. I said, why? He says, because when you want to watch Seinfeld, say, when you want to see it, Seinfeld will cost you, on demand, say, $4, or a movie or whatever. But Seinfeld will use as an example. Now, the General Electric Company will suddenly pop up on the screen and say, hey, you don't have to spend $4.50 for Seinfeld. If you answer several questions about General Electric and its new bulbs and your bulb-using habits, we'll offer you Seinfeld for 50 cents. Want the discount? Advertising now suddenly turns into a barter. You will take the ad because you'll get something very valuable, something close to free TV. And he believes that people will welcome the ads, and then the advertisers will receive all this information, and we are about to enter a period in which there is more and more barter. Now, he goes a little nutty, I think. He starts imagining movies. He says, look, the family's watching a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. It's Time Cop. And Jean-Claude comes roaring onto the screen with an incredibly hot-looking jersey on his, you know, shirt. And the kid in the household, age 10, says, wow, what a nice shirt. He says, I'm going to allow that kid to stop the action of the movie and put his cursor or put his finger on a place in which he will be able to examine the shirt off Jean-Claude Van Damme's body and possibly even order the shirt. And Ray's face breaks out into a beatific smile. I then go to the home where these families are gathered using this system, and the mother of a 10-year-old says, are you out of your mind? Would I allow a 10-year-old sitting in my living room to purchase clothing on an impulse off the TV set with his finger? Is this man a parent? Which he is, by the way. Says, this is not going to fly. And so we are approaching a point now where the technology people and the real people are about to bump into each other big time. And that will be interesting.
One of the things I found really interesting about the Stargazer program, which basically allows you through your television to order TV shows and movies, is that if you do choose to go with the ads, as opposed to paying the fee, you can't fast forward through the ads.
Yeah.
You can fast forward through the program,
yeah,
but you can't avoid the ads.
Right, so you can watch your Jean-Claude Van Damme, and if you want to see it again or speed it up, that's fine, but you get to that GE ad, and it won't move. Can't turn it off, can't do anything about it, but watch it. Yeah, so you know, that raises an interesting question about this whole business of advertising and marketing through these machines. There are two kinds of architectures. One would be, I guess you'd call it the top-down, where companies, usually big companies, say, here's what we've got. We've got movies, we've got kid shows, we've got Connie Chung, we've got some games, and here's what you can order, any of these. So essentially you're presented with a menu. You can't go off the menu, you just can choose among the items on the menu. The other approach, which has been adopted to a degree by the Washington Post when it went online, is to say, here's some stuff, but we're going to give you a space to play in. And you'll create uses for the Washington Post on computers that we've never thought of. Go ahead and play in this space. So mothers who need to figure out who's going to get to the junior high school game, the varsity junior JV soccer game on Saturday, can post a mother's list inside the Washington Post, saying, I'm going to the game, a carpool list. So moms can sign up different children, you know, to see who's going to go with whom. Now, the Washington Post couldn't think that up, but the moms could.
Well, let me stop you here.
Sure.
I'm glad you brought up the Washington Post. A lot of newspapers and magazines are feeling very threatened right now.
Yeah.
That this, like, hyper use of computers and the internet is going to drive them out of business. And so a lot of magazines and newspapers are creating online counterparts.
Right.
So you have, like, you know, the X magazine online,
right,
or, you know, this city newspaper online. And the online service is sometimes excerpts of the publication or the whole publication or just some kind of online counterpart of the publication.
Right.
And I find myself wondering, is this public relations?
No, it's just raw fear.
Fear, right. People are afraid that if they don't get online,
exactly,
they're going to be shut out.
Exactly.
And they're going to be out of date.
I mean, they're way ahead of their customers. I mean, how many people want to have a digital newspaper? Anybody you know, really?
Well, not me. I mean, I want to be able to, like, pick it up and hold it while I'm drinking my coffee.
But the advertisers are so scared that the telephone company will grab the classified stuff and the cable companies will grab another set of advertisers and their subscribers will flint off, that they have to get into the game. And that's why the telephone company is in it, because they're scared that the cable companies are going to start getting into the telephone business. That's why the cable, everybody's in it because they want to be there. They don't want to let the other guys walk away with whatever this is. Now, this is, may not be for another 20, 25 years, but businessmen are scared. So part of this is just, I have to be there. I don't want to be there, but I have to be.
Well, let's look at the Washington Post, which you look at in your Frontline program.
Uh-huh.
They have an online publication that they're doing now,
right,
where they offer, most of the newspaper?
Yeah, they do.
Plus other services, chat lines. You can read a book review, read a chapter of the book that's been reviewed, and then order the book if you want to.
Some of them.
What does the Washington Post hope to get out of this? Are they making any money on it now?
No.
Or are they just spending a lot of money on it?
They want to find out what's going on, which means they want to allow some of their readers to come up. They want to employ their readers as a way to try to invent a newspaper inside a newspaper, which is an interesting way to go. They want to... they want to begin to tiptoe into the sales business. I could imagine, since you can already order books through the Washington Post, I could imagine that you soon will be able to order flowers and movie tickets and make restaurant reservations through the Washington Post, and the Washington Post will get a cut. Now, up to now, the Washington Post has been an editorial product which gives space over to other businesses. It has not become those other businesses. It simply provides them with a place to advertise. What happens here is the Washington Post, bit by bit, gets into the cruise business, the restaurant business, perhaps the stocks and securities business, the flower business, the publishing business, and there are implications here for their editorial independence, because I said to Donnie Graham, the man who runs the paper, I said, well, if I can start ordering tickets to, say, Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, since we're on a roll with Jean-Claude, if I can start ordering tickets to movies through the Washington Post, you make more money if the movie is a success, because you're now getting a piece of the ticket. So there may be a slight bit of pressure on your movie reviewer to be friendlier to the movie, don't you think? And he said, no, because right now, if the movie's a success, we'll get more display ads week after week after week. If the movie fails, we don't get the display ads. So we are implicated in the success of other businesses, whether or not we own a piece of them. And so I said, oh. But I reserved an asterisk in my head. I said, let me just see what happens in the next few or five or six years.
My guest is journalist Robert Krulwich. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is journalist Robert Krulwich. He has a new PBS Frontline documentary called High Stakes in Cyberspace that will be broadcast next week. It's interesting to me. You know, I think so many of the homepages on the internet now are basically press releases, positioning statements,
right,
or basically advertising of one sort or another. And it seems so distant from what the original concept was,
yes,
and from what everybody was so excited about.
Well, there are still places you can go and have intelligent conversation or emotionally laden conversation or romantic conversation or more. The fact that there is now a commercial and a aggressive pamphleteering section seems in some ways just, because that is part of our civic, it is part of the way we behave. We do buy, we do sell, and we do politic. It's just, as you say, it's pushy. and it's kind of shoved its way into this space. It hasn't eliminated the other stuff, but this new territory is more newsworthy. And I have to say, because when I started doing this documentary, I was, you know, I'm not a big computer person, and I guess I thought that this would be very dull. It turned out to be just wonderful. I love it when people walk into virgin space and say, let's build. There's a kind of crazy optimism which greed and ambition produce. You know, it's the thing, like, right. These guys like Donald Trump, you know, walks up to these completely empty spaces and he says, this is going to be a casino, and 20,000 people on buses from Philadelphia will ride to this empty space every day and transact. Some of them will go upstairs. Movie stars will sing in the lounge. And all this is in his mind. So then he makes it, and then it is so, or in some cases not so. The same kind of wild and crazy dreaming is going on right now in this virtual space, and the dreamers, like Ray Smith, are going to get it wrong, selling Claude Van Damme T-shirts to 10-year-olds, in part, but somehow or other they're going to get it right and surprise us, I think. And so it's a sort of an interesting chapter, I find.
So frame the dilemma as you see it now with advertising encroaching as it is on the internet.
The dilemma is simply this. More and more often, you're going to want something, a new choice. You're going to want to see a movie right now, to see a TV show right now, to read a news story right now, to shop for a certain kind of watch right now. And you will be able to do that in the near future. But because it's expensive to serve you so individually, someone's got to pay. And advertising has walked into that space, as they often do, and say, well, we'll pay, but you have to tell us something about yourself. Advertisers want to know about their customers. So you will be asked to trade information about yourself for a discount, a price off, a T-shirt, a promo, something. You'll want the T-shirt. But I believe over time you will be increasingly hesitant to tell them about yourself.
Why? What do I lose if I give them information?
Just that sense that you have a life that is entirely your own, which you know about, and which you are the most intimate with. I mean, imagine a situation, which I do actually in the show. I turn to Ray Smith and I say, look, with this system you've got, you can see what I watch, what I read, what books I order, what if I use you, what tickets I order, where I fly, where I go, who I talk to on your telephone, who calls me, who I call. You will know, if you gather this information together, as much about me as anybody in the world, more than my wife, more than my family. You and I will know about me. And I'm not so sure I want you to know that much. What do you think? I won't tell you his answer, because otherwise you wouldn't watch the show.
No, I have to change the subject just a little bit.
Yeah.
In your show, you compare all the people using the internet to a big intersection in Times Square with a lot of billboards overhead.
Right.
And just as there are billboards overhead advertising things in Times Square, all the advertising companies want to get in on the internet.
Right.
And to prove the point, there's a video of you in one of those big electronic billboards on Times Square.
One of those. The Sony billboard right in the smack dab in the center.
So what we're seeing is you, Robert Krulwich,
yes,
narrating your program from this huge electronic,
yes,
video on Times Square. And I thought, oh, that is really clever. So who do you have to call
to get
Times Square to cooperate with this?
Public television called up the Sony Trinitron, whatever that is, the Sony thing,
uh-huh,
and they said, we want to buy 15 minutes. I said to the producer, can you do that? Can you buy 15 minutes? And I thought this was going to stop traffic. I thought, look, there I'll be 16 and a half feet tall, making odd gestures in front of the whole Times Square on a Thursday night at 7:30, prime time. Everyone's going to the theater. So I got my son and my daughter and my sister and my niece and my nephew and her friend. We all went down to watch me be really famous. This is a real downer. I am up there with slightly dirty teeth, I begin to notice, and little holes in my face that were a little larger than I had ever remembered them to be, doing something quite odd, which no one was noticing. Not a soul. No one looked up. No one thought it was odd that there was this antic character. And I appeared, by the way, in 2.5-minute continuous loops over a 15-minute period. I was there and there and there and there again and there again. My kids got bored. My sister went away. And no one on Times Square looked up.
Huh. Well, makes you wonder about the wisdom of buying advertising space there. But
I was entranced, of course.
Yeah, well, looking at those large pores. So how much do you have to pay to rent it?
Well, I think there's a PBS rate.
Special cut rate
PBS. I don't
want
to embarrass the vendors. If it costs $17,000 a minute for whatever.
Okay.
But it was, I'll tell you this, it was affordable.
In our remaining few seconds, does Frontline have a homepage? Is Frontline on
the
internet?
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. And if you call the Frontline homepage, you can hear me telling little stories about being on Times Square by punching d.com/http/boom/boom or something to that effect.
And what do you hope to get out of that?
What, off of the web?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More viewers. I want more viewers. I want more people to sign up. But I am not offering T-shirts yet.
Okay. Well, Robert Krulwich, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Robert Krulwich, his Frontline documentary, High Stakes in Cyberspace, will be broadcast on PBS next Tuesday. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.